Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. South Sudan's first vice president and leader of the SPLM-IO blames other peace partners for slow implementation of the country's peace deal.
Establishment of fund for the implementation of the agreement and to be independently managed. Two, direct allocation of a fixed amount from the oil revenue for the fund.
And hundreds of former soldiers in Sudan protest over delay payments of their retirement benefits.
On behalf of all retired officers who have been dismissed on illegal and unjust basis, that our demands be looked at immediately. We hope our decision will respond positively to our demand.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of delegates from the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition are meeting for a four-day conference in Juba to discuss issues in the implementation of the country's peace agreement. South Sudan's first vice president, Riek Machar, who is also the leader of the SPLM-IO, says the country's peace agreement offers an opportunity to realize stability in South Sudan. Machar says the peace agreement faces many challenges, including lack of funds to implement some of its key parts. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
SPLM-IO delegates discuss the sustainability of the peace deal at the 6th National Conference in Juba. Speaking at the launch of the conference on Tuesday, SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar stressed the need to implement the deal and restore peace throughout South Sudan.
There is no alternative, I emphasize, there is no alternative to building and sustaining peace in the country other than the R-axis.
Machar said several challenges are slowing down implementation of the deal, including a lack of political will from certain peace partners, which he did not mention by name, and inadequate funding of the peace process. He called on the peace partners to quickly move forward on specific steps to fully implement the deal.
Establishment of fund for the implementation of the agreement and to be independently managed. Two, direct allocation of a fixed amount from the oil revenue for the fund. Two, three, call for a donor conference to support the implementation of the agreement. Four, hold parties accountable for action of defectors that join them. Five, accelerate graduation of the necessary unified forces.
Some SPLM-IO delegates agreed that the deal faces several threats, including a lack of political will by some peace partners. Oyet Nathaniel Pierino, a senior member of the SPLM-IO, says such delays hinder efforts to restore peace and stability across the country.
Any agreement has its backbone in the transitional security arrangements and permanent ceasefire. Once it is in danger, then the agreement is also in danger. That's why we are urging those who are responsible for these violations to stop forthwith.
Machar insisted that disagreements within the then ruling SPLM party over vision, direction and governance triggered the civil war in December 2013. He told the delegates there is no reason to tolerate poor governance characterized by rampant insecurity, which he says led to deadly intercommunal conflicts before the conflict erupted. Machar said institutionalized tribalism engulfed the entire public service sector, limiting opportunities and depriving people who were not part of the system. He says his party is working to address those injustices. Widespread corruption has also been a huge problem in the country, according to Machar.
Rampant corruption and theft of public funds, lack of socio-economic development, resulting in acute poverty and dependency on humanitarian aid. Disregard for constitutionalism, a rule of law, which was manifested in the dismissal of democratically elected officials, including governors, thus undermining the will of the people.
Senior members of the SPLM party led by President Salva Kiir attended the conference, including German Onukumba, acting Secretary General of the SPLM. In a conciliatory tone, Kumba said members of the SPLM and SPLM-IO parties are now friends and should work together to achieve lasting peace.
For us as SPLM, we are ready to play politics with partners. We are not here as enemies. We were all one people before, and we disagreed and agreed again to come and run our country together.
Foreign envoys from South Africa, India, Egypt, as well as representative from United Nations Mission in South Sudan attended day one of the four-day conference. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Hundreds of ex-soldiers protested in the Sudanese capital Khartoum today against what they call delays by the transitional government to pay retirement benefits for soldiers who were laid off. Michael Atit, who attended the protest, has this report for VOA News from Khartoum.
Hundreds of Sudanese ex-soldiers chanting, "We need our rights now, not tomorrow," staged a rally in front of military headquarters in Khartoum today to demand their pension benefits. A representative from the former soldiers say more than 10,000 ex-soldiers have not received their pension for years. Some former soldiers also say they were unlawfully dismissed from military duty and have yet to receive their benefits. Al-Hajj Muhammad Ali, who read the petition on behalf of the group, says families of the former soldiers have suffered and have been living in miserable conditions due to the government delay in paying their pension. Muhammad called on Sudanese military authorities to pay the ex-soldiers and to reinstate those still of eligible age who were illegally dismissed. The protesters also called on the government to quickly set up an office to handle issues of the wounded heroes and martyrs so their families can receive their benefits.
On behalf of all retired officers who have been dismissed on illegal and unjust basis, that our demands be looked at immediately. We hope our decision will respond positively to our demand. May God help you to grant us our rights.
Fathia Suleiman Ismail worked as a nurse for 7 years at a military hospital in Omdurman. Suleiman says she was dismissed unlawfully in 2007 and has never received her employment benefits. Suleiman says she lost her husband in 2010 and has struggled to care for 5 children after the family was kicked out of an army building. She called on the army to provide ex-servicemen with their pension, to list them in the government health insurance document, and to support their families with businesses to sustain their lives.
Up to this moment, I don't have a house nor a mobility for movement. I'm not alone, though. We have thousands of others who are facing the same problem. We have been suffering for years, and no one has ever responded to our demands.
Anur Usman Nugut, office manager for the head of Sudan Sovereign Council, Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, received the petition and promised to turn it over to his boss immediately.
Your demands that you have stated in this statement will be looked at by our high army commander. Any demand here will be responded to regardless of a kind of response. I will hand it over to my boss and you will get a final response soon.
The ex-soldiers have given the government up to December 17th to address the demands. If authorities fail to respond by that date, the former soldiers say they will resume their protest. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Sudan, aid agencies say they are facing challenges in accommodating some 45,000 Ethiopian refugees who have fled into the country in the last few weeks. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says there is an urgent need for an additional refugee settlement sites as the Umrukuba camp in Sudan's Gadarif state has reached its maximum capacity of 10,000 people. Around 30 humanitarian organizations in Sudan have appealed for some $150 million to help with the influx of refugees in eastern Sudan. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
Some 30 humanitarian organizations in Sudan have appealed for $150 million to manage the unfolding refugee crisis in eastern Sudan. Stéphane Dujarric, a spokesperson for the United Nations Secretary General, said yesterday that humanitarian partners are deeply concerned about the plight of civilians in the Ethiopian Tigray region, especially in the capital Mekele, after Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed announced that Ethiopian federal troops took over the Tigrayan capital. Filippo Grandi is the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. Grandi recently visited Sudan, where he met with Tigrayan refugees.
People flee, as we know, fighting in Tigray and arrive deprived of almost everything. Most people travel with nothing. So they've left behind their belongings. They're often separated by their from their families and their relatives. And for many of them, majority are farmers, it has meant leaving their homes at the time of harvest, the key moment in their building up of their livelihood. So it's a very difficult situation for them.
And Grandi says it is a very difficult situation for Sudan. He says UNHCR, along with about 30 national and international partners, need nearly $150 million to help Ethiopian refugees in Sudan with settlement, food, health, water and sanitation, among other critical services, over the next 6 months.
We have appealed to donors for contributions totaling almost $150 million for the next 6 months to help Sudan respond to this situation. We are stepping up our response. Since Friday, UNHCR is running relief flights from Dubai and from Nairobi with essential items in addition to what has already been distributed.
Grandi says the refugee camp in Sudan's Gabarif state, which has been hosting the majority of Ethiopian arrivals over the last month, is now stretched to capacity, and that more camps need to be built as refugees continue to stream into Sudan.
About 10,000 have now been transferred by us in cooperation with the government to a site called Umrakuba in Gedaref State, which I have also visited yesterday, and where assistance is getting progressively organized. It takes a bit of time always, but it is getting progressively organized. I must flag here that local communities have been exceptionally generous, sharing food, sharing hospitality in these very first few weeks. But now the time for a stepped up international response has come.
The UNHCR chief says his agency is concerned about the lack of access to the Tigrayan region and the safety of civilians caught in the middle of fighting between Ethiopian federal troops and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF.
I want to renew here the appeal that we humanitarians have made to the federal authorities of Ethiopia to grant us that access, because people are in need and we need to collect information and to provide assistance to them. Second, and this is very specific to UNHCR, I'm worried, as I have already said in the past couple of days, about the nearly 100,000 Eritrean refugees. Now, those refugees have been hosted by Ethiopia in the Tigray region for decades.
The UN reported yesterday that the number of Ethiopian refugees who have arrived in Sudan is nearly 45,000 people, most of them children, who have fled to Sudan from Tigray as well as from other places across Ethiopia. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, health experts say it is proving difficult to trace people living with HIV/AIDS in South Sudan. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you start a conversation on a sensitive topic or issue?
First of all, you need to know the context, and you need to know what you are going to talk about and why they have brought it in that particular time. Okay. And from there, you make maybe after the introduction, you build the main body and you conclude.
You first need to put out the key things which you want to talk about, which can even capture the interest of the people. Because if you start with something which people doesn't have interest in, they will not give you time to give out what you want to tell them.
You have to know about the issue, and you have to know how to approach the issue. You have to even know how to tackle the issue, and you even have to study on how to speak on the issue to avoid conflict.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some South Sudanese living with HIV/AIDS in Juba say the COVID-19 pandemic has made it difficult to seek necessary health services in government health facilities. A community counselor at a military hospital in Juba says it's challenging to find people living with HIV/AIDS for medicine refills and counseling. The deputy chairperson at the South Sudan HIV and AIDS Commission says her office has run out of funds and is not able to support community counselors. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
30-year-old Lanier Gladys Geoffrey, a mother of four who sells fresh vegetables at a Juba market, says she has been living with the HIV/AIDS virus for the last 2 years. Geoffrey says since the pandemic began, she has been afraid to see her doctor for fear that she would be mistaken for having COVID-19.
During this corona outbreak, I may be having a cough or I may be having a flu. I will fear to go to the doctor. I feel like if I go to the doctor will chase me away. That, now you are coughing or you are having flu, you will also infect me.
Gladys says restrictions on the number of passengers allowed in public service vehicles and a higher transport fare makes it difficult for her to travel from Juba's Neo Site neighborhood to the Juba Military Hospital for counseling or to obtain her antiretroviral drugs.
My voice to the NGOs or to the government, sometimes you may get a client who is on bad condition, cannot manage to go where he or she should get the drug. So it will be difficult for him or her. Sometimes getting money will be also difficult for transport. So if they can get a truck for us, it would have been better.
Harriet Fauzia has served as a city supervisor and pharmacist at Juba Military Hospital for nearly 13 years and has counseled dozens of people living with HIV/AIDS. Fauzia says during the pandemic, staffers have had to travel to clients' homes to provide counseling and drug refills and pay for their own transportation.
I go up to Jebel Denga, Luri, Mogiri. If somebody is sick there, you take the drug and you see the condition. Like if I were to have my own car, if the condition is bad, I will bring to the hospital for more management.
Dr. Achol Yom, deputy chairperson at the South Sudan HIV/AIDS Commission, says her institution has run out of funds and cannot support community counselors. Yom says government funds only cover employees' salaries, but partner organizations are now providing support to the South Sudan AIDS Commission.
UN agencies, they are filling the gap, but the gap is so huge. The gap is supposed to be less than maybe 3%, 5%, but not 98%, because this is what the international community is doing or funders are doing. Our budget was 21 million, most of it going to the salaries. Nearly 18 million going to salaries. Remaining how much? 3 million. 3 million doesn't do anything.
UNAIDS Country Director in South Sudan, Lord Dirty, says the agency has recorded some 200,000 people living with HIV, a figure that does not include the number of people who are unaware of their HIV status.
27% of people living with HIV know their status. Out of that number, 68% are on treatment. And out of that 68% which are on treatment, 80% are virally suppressed. However, if you take the 200,000 or so people who are HIV positive, only 18% of them are on treatment. And only 14% of those are virally suppressed.
Those who are not virally suppressed can infect others, says Doughty. The government allocated 7 million South Sudanese pounds for the HIV-AIDS Commission out of this year's 208 billion South Sudanese pounds budget. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Still on AIDS, affordable treatment will soon be available for children living with HIV in low- and middle-income countries, thanks to an agreement between the Global Health Agency Unit AIDS and the Clinton Health Access Initiative, or CHAI. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
This pediatric treatment has been available for children in wealthy countries, but out of reach for children in poor countries. A new agreement with two generic drug makers, Viatris and McLeod's, will significantly lower the price. Unitaid and CHAI plan to roll out the first antiretroviral treatments specifically designed for children next year in six African countries: Benin, Kenya, Malawi, Nigeria, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. An estimated 1.7 million children globally live with HIV, but only half of them receive any treatment, and 100,000 die every year. UNITAID spokesman Hervé Verhoesel says HIV is not suppressed for many of those children. That is due in part to the lack of availability of effective drugs that are properly adapted for them.
Many children living with HIV have a poor response to treatment because they take antiretroviral medication that are not correctly dosed or bitter to taste. They know with this new drug, and that something is very important, it will be much, much easier and much, much less expensive.
Verhoesel says even the youngest children will love the strawberry-flavored pills. Under the new pricing agreement, the cost for the yearly pediatric HIV treatment will go from more than $480 per child to under $120 per child. UNITAID calls that a game changer. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in the southern part of Africa, a pandemic on top of another pandemic makes a strange and unsettling World AIDS Day. But even amid worries about coronavirus, health workers and activists in South Africa with the world's highest HIV burden are finding innovative ways to fight the spread of HIV. VOA's Anita Powell looked at one such pilot project started before the global pandemic struck, with funds from the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief that has had remarkable results. She reports from Johannesburg.
Tabani Raymond Kalala, or Coach as he prefers to be called, was diagnosed with HIV 6 years ago. He lives in a small town in rural South Africa. But when societies across the globe went into viral lockdowns, his world expanded. This year, the 33-year-old community development worker was part of a pilot project called Coach Mpilo. The word means life or health in isiZulu. As a coach, he works with 54 newly diagnosed men and boys, supporting their HIV journey and boosting them in ways big and small. The launch of the project earlier this year coincided with the beginning of global shutdowns to stop the spread of the coronavirus. But he says that hasn't slowed down progress.
I think the program has been successful. However, the challenge is we had to cut down many coaches. We need to try, I'm not sure if this is possible, but if we can get more coaches, because the program has been very successful to such an extent that even the facilities that we work in have seen the difference that we've been doing.
This small initiative is one of the ways that the nation with the world's heaviest burden of HIV continues to innovate. The coaching program will soon be fully funded for about $1 million a year from the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, which has totaled $90 billion so far since launching in 2003. Those funds for the coaching program, which cover about 4,000 players and 50-plus coaches across South Africa, go a long way. Organizers say the results have been astonishing in terms of getting participants to stay on their medications. Today's HIV drugs can beat the virus down to undetectable levels in the blood, meaning it cannot be transmitted. project organizer Silver Shabalala.
I think this has been like a revolutionary program for us because it has never happened before, you know, where HIV positive men come together and support each other in a way that is very sincere and, you know, honest, and which has got like a brotherhood, you know, kind of, you know, relationship. We've seen that, I mean, the retention rate for coaching below in the 6 months that we piloted the project, it was a 98% retention. We retained almost 4,000 men that, you know, had been lost, you know, to treatment. And if you look at DOH, I mean, their retention is almost like 24% during COVID. So this was really something that was amazing in terms of the retention rate.
On Tuesday, Dr. Deborah Birx, the U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator and U.S. Special Representative for Global Health Diplomacy, said the dual pandemic has still allowed for progress. The U.S.-funded effort means almost 3 million babies have been born HIV-free. More than 20 million lives have been saved, and the number of people in treatment has increased. But Birx says doctors cannot do this alone. That's why they need community partners.
In some cases and in some countries, we're actually seeing more stigma and more discrimination among key populations. This is not getting better. If anything, the structural barriers that exist now are getting higher and more difficult to address. And that's why we have to put effort not only into setting up these peer-led services, but protecting those peer-led services so that they can be successful.
Coach Kalala has one message for the world during this very strange time.
People shouldn't feel sorry for us. We're just ordinary human beings like every other person who takes TB treatment, who takes BP treatment, you know. I think support is very important. Do not stigmatize.
It's precisely the kind of thing a coach would say. Words that resonate well beyond his tiny coastal town of Tuolumne, and well beyond one pandemic, or even two. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with Power Stars and their song about AIDS, also known as Selimo. Listening to Power Stars with the song Kwenya Kwenya. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes. phones and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kabati on kibadi tadi kendra madri jayo.